What's going on, guys? Welcome to the Winner's Circle by Grande Sports Training, a podcast where we dive deep into the mindset of professional soccer players. Today's special guest is Callum Chapman of Miami FC. Callum, how you doing today, my man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Thank you for joining us. How's your offseason been so far?
It's been up and down, to be honest. It was nice to take a break after such an intense season, short and sharp. So I haven't done a lot of work. I'm actually starting my own mini preseason up on Monday. I've got a trainer and all my diet and juices and all that good stuff. So I start that Monday. Other than that, it's been pretty quiet and I haven't done a lot. So Monday's going to be tough.
Awesome, man. I know you took a nice time off, and that time off is always needed for you guys, huh? Because yeah, I think just full-on football for every single day for a few months.
Yeah, I think mentally and physically it's been nice. I mean, I don't know what other soccer players are like, but when I'm playing, my mind's always going on the next game or what I could have done better. So I never really switch off. So it's nice. It's nice to get the off season for a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. So Callum, so the podcast is called The Winner's Circle. And the reason why I call it The Winner's Circle is because, you know,
Miami United a winner? I don't know.
I mean, yeah, man, we're winning games, but no, that's I always like to get into mindset of you guys, professional footballers, because you guys always have what I've come to realize is a winning mentality. So I want to ask you a quick question off the bat. To you, what does it mean to be a winner?
It means everything. I mean, if you come and see our training sessions and stuff, everything is so competitive. Players are nearly fighting, tackles are flying in. But then at the end of training, no one cares about it. Everyone's having a laugh in the locker room. But when we're on the field playing those small-sided games, everyone is given 150% to win. So, we have people being big babies. If they lose, they're walking off the field, throwing bottles. I mean, I love that atmosphere. So I thought I thrived on it last year. So it means everything. If you're not a winner, then you're not going to go far.
I love that answer. I couldn't agree with you more, man. What would you say is something that kind of developed that mentality in you? Or was it an experience when you were younger? How did you get that?
Yeah, I think when I was, I don't know, I feel like everyone has the same story, to be honest. When you're younger, I felt that I was one of the best players around in a really big, pool of players. Like, I thought I was the best. And I don't know, you want me to talk about Southampton or?
Whatever you want, man. I just want to know how you got that mentality, right? There has to have been a point in your life that you kind of maybe saw another player, saw a teammate, saw an older player, or you just were tired of losing in practice, and you're just like, nah.
Never been a loser. No. But I'd say when I was younger, yeah, Southampton came in, got me in to come train, did really well, and I looked around and I was like, dude, I'm better than all these players. And this is a Premier League best academy in the country. So they started flying me over, paying for my flights, and I'd come over and train and play, which was awesome. Then after a few years or whatever, they were like, look, you're as good as the players we've got, but we need you to be better. If you're flying back and forth, we're paying you. They were like, you can stay with a foster family here or you're done. And for some reason, my parents said no, you're going to stay with us, do school, whatever. So that sort of ended. And I was just really sad. But I knew what the other players were like. So I knew I wasn't disheartened or anything because I knew the level it was. But after that, maybe 14 to 16, when I started playing back with the kids that weren't as good, then I started being told, oh, I wasn't good enough, or I'd be on the bench and stuff like that. So that fueled me. All the people saying oh, you weren't good enough, or you don't have this or you don't have that, that stuff always stuck in my mind. And there's a point just before I turned pro where that happened. I don't know if I'll dive into that later on rather than right here, but there's been so many points where people said, oh, you're not good enough or you don't have this. But I've always known and stayed focused. So the winning mentality came from people saying, nah, you're not good enough or this. Well, they can't say that if you're winning things. So
how old were you when you first got scouted by Southampton?
I was young. Well, younger. I think I was like 11.
And at that time, you already knew Southampton, right? You knew they were big.
Yeah. I was absolutely like crazy.
So you were absolutely through the roof.
Yeah, I mean, Luke Shaw was there. There's another player named Maka. He plays for Mansfield. I played with Shea Adams as well at Southampton. We played in the lower leagues in England. Like, the margin really is small. Like, Shea Adams at Southampton, we were playing lower leagues for Ilkeston. And he couldn't afford, like, $2 on, like, a sandwich or anything. And we lived together. We had a great laugh. We played together. And like, I was like, this kid's good. And then he just kept pushing on. And now he's making millions at Southampton, which he should, because like, he's a great person and player. But the line is so, so thin. It's right there.
Would you say traveling back and forth to Southampton during those rides, would you think a lot about maybe your future, about what you're doing? I know it's a young age, but you know, at that young age, you got to kind of grow up quick, right?
I don't know if it was so much growing up. I think I was like dreaming. Like, I was walking in, I could see all these facilities, like the gym, the grass. I could see the first team. Like, I was just dreaming, like, about, oh, I can be that player that steps on the pitch and scores, or like Chamberlain's over there. Like, I can go, like, play with him. Like, I was always excited. My mind was always going. Like, I always wanted to do well because I wanted to keep pushing up as much as I could. But I was never really nervous. I was just excited to dream, like, the possibility. Everything's around, like, the big lights and everything. All this proper professional setup. Like, it was awesome. It was a great experience.
And I think nowadays with like younger players, if they're exposed to that environment, I think, like you said, it keeps them dreaming. And I think that's important at a young age, right? Just to be able to see that environment.
One of the biggest things I think I learned was before I came to Southampton, I'd always be confident and take the ball and dribble past everyone and demand the ball. But when I took that step up, I was sort of a little bit quieter. And I always really regretted not being as confident and demanding and showing what I could do. I always played within myself, and I think that let me down at such a young age. So my advice to anyone that does make that step, be the same person, be confident, show them what you can do. Like, you belong there. So that's what I took away from that experience, that played within myself, could have done a lot more. So once I got released, I wanted to look and learn from it.
What would you say that happened to you, like, mentally, for that to happen? Because I know a lot of players, a lot of younger players, especially when you're put into a new environment and maybe you get picked to be in that new environment, sometimes you get in your head. You're like, I mean, I know I'm good enough to be here. And maybe they think you're better than what you think you are, right? But then there's always something that you just know, I gotta play safe. I gotta do this. I gotta do that, just to make sure that what they think of you is the correct one. Right. But then you start switching subconsciously without even knowing it. You start switching up your type of player that you are.
I think,
do you think you know why?
I think I was probably focusing too much on things that I can't control, which was like, players are always going to be coming in. They're trying to steal your job. They're trying to, like, there's a new player coming through the door every week. So if you're focusing on that, you're not really focusing on yourself, when you've got the ball, the game, how you can get better. So once I got released, I took a step back and was like, well, what did I do? What can I actually control? So it just helped me take a step back and then understand the things that I could control. You can't control who the coach is going to pick or who he likes. You can just control what you're good at, and hopefully that's good enough for them.
So yeah, it just goes back to the controllables, man. I completely agree with you. I know there's a lot of players that talk about the uncontrollables, like the stuff that you can't control, like maybe something small, like, yeah, I'm not getting any minutes, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, I'm just not fast enough, I'm just not strong enough, right? And that's natural. Every single young player goes to that. Like, damn, that guy can ping the ball 50 yards at 12 years old and I can barely get it off the ground. Yeah. I say that because that's what happened to me, man. Yeah. At 11, 12, like, I couldn't hit a ball from the 18-yard box to the post. I was like, man, how does he do it, you know? And then I would just spend time trying to figure out how he did it, just learning, not kind of like hating on him, but learning. And then I'll just go back to the drawing board on my own. But that's something that just happened naturally. Now, for some players, it doesn't happen naturally, and you have to have that little push, right? Like, you got to do this. You got to do it. You got to give them a little bit of direction. So, Callum, after you were released at Southampton, what were the next?
There's one little funny story that I think is worth sharing from that. So, on my, like, when I went over and trialed or trained with the team, all the kids, like, I saw, got together, and it really does happen like this, and I never thought of it. They all got together anyway. I was playing, I was doing so well, I was having a great training session. The players wouldn't pass me the ball. Whenever I got the ball, they would just come flying in and like two-foot me. When I'd shoot, they just handball it. Like, they just, no matter what I did, they made it the most like unfriendly place ever. No one would talk to me, everyone turned their back to me. Like, it was just interesting that even at that age, I feel like those kids had the winner's mentality, where they were like, look, like, this guy's coming in to take one of our positions, like, make it different. Like, don't let him. So at such a young age, it was really hostile. So I think that made me grow up as well. Like, I realized, like, these kids, like, don't want me to do well. Like, I've got to look after myself, just show what I can do. But I thought it was really funny, even at that young age, that kids were trying to push me out of a job already.
No, that is hilarious, because you don't see that everywhere, man.
Yeah.
You do not see that. Do you think your coach at that time had some sort of influence in that? Like, would he let you guys play? Would he step in and, like, say this, say that? Or how was that?
No, I don't think he'd step in. He just let it go. If anything, he was probably more on their side. Maybe he was testing me. I have no idea, but he didn't step in. England's such a different animal, where everything is just how it is. People say what they think, and there's no sort of boundaries. So I think that shaped me into a stronger character.
Yeah, I had a similar experience when I was younger. You know, I was a young guy, but this was maybe at 14 years old. I was training with the U18s. And same thing, man. It was my first time going into that environment where, like, you're getting eaten alive for every little thing you do. Maybe I didn't lose the ball, but I gave a pass too slow, or I messed up, or I did. My goodness, my whole life would be shattered in a matter of 5 seconds because they're talking so much. But that kind of going from an environment where it's not like that to a competitive environment where they're on your ass for every little thing, like, you know, how do you make that transition? What was your way of making that transition? Like, I know maybe after practice, after trainings, right, you would kind of realize that. You would think to yourself, like, damn, like, you know, they're not letting me do anything. They're coming in two-footed. What would you think to yourself? Would you think maybe tomorrow I got to go in harder? Or, like, what can I do differently?
See, that's a tough question. My mentality, I just love proving people wrong. Like, I love being the underdog. I don't know why. Like, I love it to just prove everyone wrong and shut them up and show that you're the best. And it's kind of hard to say, like, where I got that from. I've just always been that way. Like, I've always found a way. I mean, even in the States playing pro, I've always just found a way. And I think I realized when I got older that you have to play your own strengths. So if someone's good with speed, then use it. If someone's big and strong in the air, then use it. Don't try and do something that looks good. Just play your strengths. And that's, I think that's why I did so well from college to pro, because I know what my strengths are and I know what my weaknesses are. So I'm going to play to my strengths. So I don't know. I've just always had that, I guess, fire in my belly to prove people wrong. So I don't really know how to answer that. I don't know where I grasped it from.
See, and that leads me to my next question right now is, I've spoken to a lot of professional footballers, and one thing that they always say, similar to what you just said, is they know their strengths. So in other words, you're self-aware of your abilities and you know how to use it and when to use it.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of, if not the most important things that any person, not even just a footballer, any person needs to learn. Like, what are they really good at?
Yeah.
And how can we hone in all our focus and energy on that specific thing?
Yeah.
And I think it's okay. If you're not good at something, work on it. But yeah, don't spend so much energy trying to be like the best at your weaknesses, right?
Yeah.
It's more so anything like, if I'm a great left-footed player and my right foot is like just there, can I at least get it to work to when I need to make sure I give a good one-touch pass or control and play, right? That's it. I don't need anything else.
Yeah.
But I couldn't agree with you more, man. That's, self-awareness is amazing. But yeah, so now after Southampton, what were your next steps after you got released from Southampton and they told you what they told you? What were your next steps in your career?
I cried a little bit. And then I carried on playing football where I'm from until I was 16. And then I decided to go to England. So flew to England and played, like got, they call it like a 2-year scholarship. So you play 2 years for an academy, they pay you, and you do like school. So went over there, got housing, did a 2-year program, played in the lower leagues. And that was awesome. I think playing with proper English adults at the age of 16 and how they act and interact, I really grew up. I was there with a friend and it was just us in a house at 16. So I had to cook and all this good stuff. So I really had to grow up. So we played there 2 years, which was awesome. Played in the FA Youth Cup, got really far. It was a really cool experience. Anyway, some company came in and started talking about coming to America. There's some really cool schools and facilities. It's a decent level and you can get your school. So he explained all that process and then I jumped on it and came out here to the States.
Okay. And how was that experience for you? What would you say jumped out right away in the difference of cultures between, you know, being over there in Europe and being over here in the States? And not only about football, but just life outside of football. What would you say jumped out at you first?
My first 2 years were actually in Lubbock, Texas, which is like the middle of nowhere. So I got sold a dream. And I didn't really know what I was getting myself in for. The football was good. Like, we won conference. The first year came second. The second year. So the soccer was good. It's in Texas, so the standard wasn't very high. Outside of soccer, the school was really, really, really religious. Like, I remember I had a crate of beer, like, under my seat. And, like, my car was parked and it'd been there, like, a week. And then all of a sudden, all these, like, police come flying through my dorm room. And they're like tearing my apartment to shreds, looking for stuff. I'm like, what are you doing? And they're like, oh, we found beer in your car. I'm like, yeah, that's all there was. There's nothing else. So anyway, they're looking for all this crap. And I got, what did I get? I got like 20, no, no. It was like 30 hours community service. And I had to write a 24-page paper on why like having beer is bad. And like, I was looking around thinking, dude, what have I done? Like, England, you can drink at 18. And then over here, it's like a SWAT team just came into my apartment for like 4 cans of beer. So it was, I enjoyed the soccer team and the culture. Like, there was good people. And outside of that, some of the the students and stuff were really great people, but like the staff and the place itself, man, it was like a prison. It was crazy. So I got out of there real quick and I transferred to Palm Beach Atlantic, and it was the best decision I made in my entire life. For the last 3 years of like my college, I couldn't have asked for anything better.
Did you know where Palm Beach Atlantic was at that time? Because I know a lot of people here in the States want to come down south to Florida, and that's probably the best decision they make. Did you know at that time that Florida was a spot?
My coach, like, I didn't, because I emailed like a few schools and a couple of D1 schools, and I was actually going to go to Michigan State. I got offered a full ride, and I was like, dude, that would be unbelievable. And then they took it away and gave it to a freshman. So West Palm was like one of my only options with such a good scholarship. So at the time, I didn't know, because my coach had said, dude, you should see about West Palm. Like, it's nice down there, and they got a really good record. So I wasn't really looking at the location at the time. It was more about their record and if they're a good program. But everything fit together, the program, the location. So it just all worked out for the better.
That's awesome, man. I know college is definitely a great experience as well. You know, you kind of, you make a lot of friends. You make a lot of memories, a lot of great experiences in university. How was your season, your first season in PBA?
My first
going from that culture and that environment in Texas, in the middle of nowhere, to PBA, how was it?
Oh yeah, as soon as I got there, it was like, I was like, okay, this is what life is. This is what I came for right here. So that was amazing. So I'd gone back at Christmas and something had happened and with my knee, and I was like, oh, like I didn't really think about it. So I came back, like I fell over and hit my knee and it was sore and like whatever. I just like, I've never had issues. So I came back and then we had like first day of training. And I remember training so bad. And like, these are all new players. And like, these are good. And I was like, man, my knee, like, just, like, I can't kick it properly. Like, it keeps whatever. And all these players are there, like, dude, this guy can barely play. And I'm there, like, oh, man, we're training. And I'm trying, like, flip flaps. Just, like, we're just having, like, trainings with teams. So I'm messing around, dribbling, trying flip flaps and all this crap. And my knee's, like, dying. So anyway, like, I go to the coach, I'm like, dude, like, my knee's, like, really struggling. And anyway, what I'm trying to say is all those players and even the coach were like, dude, like, I think this guy's shit or bad. And anyway, I go to the MRI, get an MRI, and I torn my meniscus and something else. And like, it was bad. So I needed surgery. So I've come in, all these players and coaches think like I'm bad. I've had surgery. And then some cartilage kept like falling off my knee. So anyway, this small little knee thing kept me out for like a year and a half or something, year and 2 months. And at that whole time, these players like remembered me for those sessions, like that first session, and thought I was bad. And I remember it like used to burn. It burned me in my mind. Like they thought I was only this good, and like, it used to kill me that I had to sit out for so long with them thinking that.
Because it just goes back to you wanting to prove everybody wrong.
Yeah, it was killing me because I couldn't prove it. I had to wait so long. It was killing me. We still, all my friends now, we still laugh about it. They're all like, dude, remember that first day when we all thought you were shit?
That's actually hilarious. During that year and a half that you were out, how did it affect you? Besides that, like, you know, I know that you came, primary reason to come here to the States was to play football, to get your education. And now football is taken away from you. How did you deal with that?
So that one, like, that's like my first injury. So I was there smashing rehab, like going to the gym, doing my school. And like, I was going out a lot as well because the team would travel to games and I'd just be there. And all my friends were basically the team. But I'd go out a lot, to be honest, as well. So I went out, went to the gym. It was just like, I wasn't really playing soccer, which was sad, but I just kept busy. But
that's good.
I came back. I'm trying to think, dude, it's been so long, but I actually, in my senior, I actually had 3 knee surgeries during college. It was a tough time.
That's insane.
But my senior year, we had such a good team. My senior year, I felt my knee like something tear, and I was like, in like this third to last game, and I was like, dude, like that felt like an ACL. So I was like that whole week, I was like, dude, like my career's like done. Like, what am I gonna do with my life? Like, this is, I thought I was going down to play the professional route, but no one's gonna take me. I'm an international, and my knee's just been torn. So went and got an MRI, and it was like my meniscus got locked or something. So my leg was locked for like a week. So anyway, they took out the meniscus, and he was like, look, I've taken it out. Like, when you get older, it's going to be sore, but like you can actually play. So I waited 11 days after surgery, and then I started training, and we played in the tournament, and then I scored the winning goal in that. And like, dude, that was just like one extreme low to one extreme high. And I was like, dude, this is crazy. But yeah, I just thought that experience there was just.
Yeah, man. Injuries, especially those types of injuries, is like crazy ups and downs, man. Yeah. Crazy. More downs than ups, especially when you can't do anything. And I think the secret there is just to keep busy. You know, I've personally gotten that injury. Partial ACL tear, out twice. And I know a lot of my old teammates.
Did you get it?
I didn't get surgery. Rehab. I didn't get surgery. Yeah, just pure rehab. Then COVID happened, and you know, I had a break from the field, and I could just focus on just, you know,
strengthening it.
YouTube was my best friend. Like, what do I have to do? Okay, I feel this, and I would Google it. How do I do? You know, so I was just.
Dude, I feel like Googling stuff is the worst. Like, I feel this. It tells you that you're like, you're dying, you're on your deathbed. Yeah, I hate Google. Yeah.
It tells you everything, even the things that you're kind of like, people ask these questions. Like, oh, so there's some people out there feeling the same thing as me. You know?
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. That's crazy, though.
That same year, I think in my time at college, we lost like 3 games. And every time it was flipping in the first round of the Nationals to Lynn. And my last senior year, when I'd come back, I'd scored that goal. We went to penalties in Nationals, and the keeper saved mine, and we lost. And I was just like, it's like up, down, up. It's crazy.
So now going into your professional career now. After college, you graduated senior year. What was your first experience, or how did you make that happen?
So I had an assistant on the team that knew an agent, and he'd been to a lot of our games and whatnot. So he spoke to him. He spoke to him, and the agent spoke to me. He's like, "Yeah, I really like you. This, like, give me your tape. Like, let's see what we can do." To be fair, this is probably like the toughest part of the whole journey. I went to a combine in Midwestern, which was okay. And then I went to like another combine somewhere, I can't remember. And then I did another. So I did like 3 combines. And during my time in college, I played PDL. So the Charleston Battery coach had seen me play, and he really liked me. But the issue always was like, the green card or whatever, and I hadn't got a green card. I was an international that time, and people don't really spend international spots on defenders or keepers. So anyway, I traveled around to those 3 combines, nothing came, and then I got invited to preseason with Tampa for like 4 days or whatever. So I went there, and this has stuck with me for life. So I went there. I thought I trained well the first day, like played center back. I thought it was good. I loved it. The next day, Neil Collins comes out. He's the head coach. And the team set up an 11 and 11. And he's like, "Oh, Cal, can you come here and just like be a linesman?" So I had a bit. He gave me a bit. And I'm thinking like, dude, like You literally got me all the way here to stand and be a linesman. I'm not joking. I was a linesman for like 2 hours and that was it. And I remember being like, dude, this guy just disrespected me so bad. He just made me come and be a linesman. And I think he made me come because he was missing a player for that one day. So the next day I called my agent. I was like, look, like, I'm not going to just be a linesman like that. Like, I'm not wasting my time. So I gave him the bid back, obviously, and then I drove back and left it. And I remember being like, dude, maybe this isn't going to happen. Like, this is my last, like, I don't think I have anything else. And anyway, my agent was like, no, look, like, go to Miami, go do preseason. And I was like, okay. And I really was like, this is my last chance or the last time I'm going to try. So, I went for preseason and I just kept training, kept doing well. And I think it helped that the manager was English and he likes my sort of style of play and stuff. And I don't think, I'm not one of those people that just kick the ball. So I think that's a bit different. But did really well in preseason. Then it just clicked. And then he wanted me back, offered me a contract. And then we just kept each year, just kept moving forward. So, but that experience was like, it hit home, it hurt me. And what made this season so good is that we beat Tampa twice at home when I actually got, and then I scored the goal to beat Tampa. And like, I was just like, dude, like, karma right there. Like, I scored and beat Tampa and Neil's there, like, annoyed, upset or whatever. And it was just like such a good feeling, dude. That's what would be like my highest moment, getting pied off from Tampa and then scoring the game winner against them. It was awesome.
That's a crazy story.
That was a lot of information, I know.
That's a lot of disrespect right there, man. Like damn. That's crazy.
That's like the biggest thing. I've never forgot that. And that's what I mean, like the winner's mentality. Like, I wanted to prove him wrong so bad that I deserved to be on his team or like in this league without a doubt. Like, it just stuck with me forever.
Yeah. And I there's this saying that a lot of, Latinos use, and maybe if I translate to English, maybe there's something similar, but it says, el fútbol da revancha. So football always gives revenge.
Yeah.
I don't know if maybe there's a saying in English.
There's not, but I couldn't agree. But I couldn't agree more.
So it, I don't know why or how. There's no explanation, but it always happens. There's always maybe a story like yours or a final that you should have won. It's always like you always get circled back around and boom, now it's your turn. Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy to me. That experience now with Tampa and you getting disrespected like that, obviously – it affected you, but you're kind of like, you know what? No, like screw this. I'm going to, if I can make it happen, I'm going to continue and, you know, make shit happen. Now, Miami FC comes knocking on the door. Miami FC signs you. Was that kind of like a little fuel to the fire? Like, Miami FC wants me, Tampa Bay didn't want me. Like if we ever play them, right? Because yeah. You guys knew you guys were going to play each other because it's so close. It's kind of like a subconscious like motivation, because that's huge, man. Like, you know, just get, oh yeah, come to be aligned. That's disrespectful.
Yeah, dude, that yeah.
That's disrespectful.
I think after that though, like, I was really low. As in, like, that really nearly stopped me from like hanging up the boots. Like, that was it. I was like, damn, like, that's how bad someone like sees me. So that really, that was it. That was like, I nearly stopped. So I've not stopped thinking about how close it was until like I stopped playing. But when Miami came knocking on the door, like, I love this side. Like, I love where I'm at. I love Miami, West Palm. Like, this is my home. So I don't think I could have asked for a better team. Like, I love that. And this year was disappointing with that. I got a red card at the end of last year. So I couldn't, like, I had to miss 3 games. So I couldn't play them the first time we played them. And then we played them. Actually, no, that's wrong. I played them at home the first time. And like I got cramp in like the 60th minute. It was like 0-0 or 1-1. And then like we ended up losing that. So that like that killed me. Then we play them at home twice. We beat them. And then we're playing them away. And I had too many yellow cards. So I couldn't play them away. And then we got beat 3-0. But there's no other team that like I'm so up for that game every time. Like no one needs to say anything to me because I'm so ready for that game to beat that guy. So like that winner's mentality against Neil is through the roof, through the roof. No one has to say anything. So I love playing those games because I love being able to beat him and look at him at the end and be like, yeah, dude, you missed out. Not me. Look at the team we've got. So
yeah, I'm actually
excited for that next year.
I actually remember one of the Tampa games that you guys played at home. And I mentioned to you, man, I was like, Callum, you were getting up on every single corner kick. And I think you won at least like five corners that game. And I was like, this guy's trying to score.
Yeah.
This guy's trying. And me not even knowing this story, but you were trying to score on them bad, man.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You keep a clean sheet. Like, yeah, that's great. That's what you want to do. But like, dude, you get to score against this guy and then like, look at him. Like, there's not much better feelings. And I think that kind of, I didn't bring it up before, but with my knee and stuff, when I heard it and I thought like, that's it. I think what I realized is I would miss, like I couldn't imagine sitting behind a desk and not having that like competitiveness against someone or like those nerves in your stomach. Like I would miss that. I don't know where I'd get that anywhere else from playing professional. So that it really made me think, like, dude, if I don't play, like, where can I grab this sort of emotion and feeling? Because I need it. Like, I love it.
Exactly. All right, Cal. So thank you so much for that, man. I think it's time for our quick podcast questions.
Good.
Just going to throw them at you, whatever you think first.
We just keep going. I just come back.
Keep going, something. Yeah.
All right,
man.
One word,
so
one word.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, not one word. You can short answer, long, however you want to answer.
All right.
So my first question for you is, what advice would you give a teenage Callum? 13, 14-year-old Callum. If you could speak to him right now, what would you tell him?
Keep going, keep training, get in the gym, prove people wrong.
What are the top three rules that you use in your everyday life?
Be honest. Be straightforward. Just be a good person.
Love that. So far, from everything that you've experienced in your life, what would you say is the biggest lesson that you've learned?
Biggest lesson I've learned? Yeah, probably the Tampa experience. Don't give up. I was so close to giving up. And now look at me, I get to play in the USL for one of the best teams and places in the country. So don't give up.
Where do you see yourself in the next 5 years?
Here in Miami playing.
Then my last question, are you happy?
Yeah. I couldn't imagine doing anything else. The team, the players, like, I love it. I love waking up every morning and getting to train in the Florida sun, having a joke with my friends. Like there's no better feeling.
That's beautiful, Callum. Thank you so much for your time today, man. Again, it was a great, great time just listening to your story, everything that you went through. And I hope all the listeners tuning in, you guys get a lot from his story because there was a lot of value in that. A lot of value in all your experiences throughout your life and where you are today is been amazing. So, guys, again, this is the Winner's Circle podcast by Grande Sports Training, where we dive deep into the professional mindset of professional soccer players. Until the next time, guys.